He starts walking around this pond. Well, my mind goes to, I'm going to record this because when this alligator eats him, this is going to be like some cool stuff to have on video, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I start recording him sneaking around the pond to get close to the alligator to record it and take a picture.
Right.
And this thing lays there and he gets, I don't know, 20, 30 feet away. And the alligator kind of like stands up a little bit on its all fours, just kind of raises up off its belly. And I'm thinking, all right, here we go. This is the money shot right here.
Hello, welcome to our podcast, Digital Forensics Redefined. I'm your host, Calvin Weeks.
And I'm your co-host, Rob Walensky.
There's only one truth, but multiple techniques to find the truth in digital forensics. We explore those various methods by examples of real cases and incidents where digital forensics was either used or not used and how that affected the outcome. So, Rob, you got our topic today. Tell us what that's going to be about.
Well, it's definitely not a case. I'd refer to it more as an incident.
Okay. All right. We'll take that.
I'm going to step back in time here a little bit to about 1997 when I was a newer law enforcement officer.
Okay.
Myself and another investigator, we were working drug cases. And
right.
At that time, cellular technology was still, I guess, in its infancy stages compared to where we're at today, but it was there.
Back then you were able to identify as an investigator working drug cases, you were able to see the value of digital forensics in those kind of cases?
Yeah. It was almost all the time, even then. Even with the old T3 technology where you had to hit the button three or four times to get a capital D to text somebody to say you had drugs, you know.
Yeah.
And then the message never fit on the screen, so you'd have to scroll down to finish the message, and the date and time would be at the bottom or whatever,
Well, that was back in the days, too, where the cell phones were not as advanced. So sometimes, it was quite often, a lot of times you may not be able to get the data out of the phone. And you're using video cameras and video capturing the screenshots and all that kind of stuff, right?
Almost exclusively, yeah. A lot of times the software and the hardware that you had at that time, you could maybe get the contact list out of it. Anything else or something would be manual, you know, photos or video.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Continue.
So this becomes a thing, and I recognize that it's important that I'm constantly taking photos of cell phones and cases and stuff. So me and another guy, a longtime friend of mine who was also in law enforcement, we come up with this brilliant idea that we're going to find some official training in cellular devices.
Right.
So we did in Florida.
Yeah.
So
free trip.
Well, yeah, free trip. I did survive, obviously, because I'm here today. But so we book flights and we book a hotel room and we rent a vehicle and we land our butts in Florida.
Yeah.
And we're going to go to this, I did 3 or 5 day training. I don't recall what it was. But we get down there. First day of training, we show up. And very early on, we recognize that maybe this isn't the right place for us.
Right.
And the reason I say that is because everybody in this room, this training room, was smart.
So you wasn't smart?
Well, I'm not sure if I would describe me as smart or not, not in relation to cell phones and these people that were coming to this training, but
yeah, being that you started out and you're a drug guy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm working drugs and these guys are doing high tech stuff.
Right.
I just want to know how to get data off cell phones, and these guys are talking about all kind of craziness with this stuff. So,
right.
But I think they recognize the fact that maybe we weren't the sharpest marbles in that room as it relates to cell phones as well. So they kind of catered the training to us, and we fit in, and ultimately it was very educational. I mean, I would have to say the two of us probably learned the most because we had the most to learn when we arrived. So,
right.
But in any event, along with the training, we get there day one, lunchtime. We've heard all morning about this alligator that lives in this retention pond out off the parking lot of this training facility. There's some woods. There's a main highway out there. It's kind of off the highway. There's some grass, and there's this retention pond. So we don't have a lot of alligator sightings in Wisconsin. And I thought these guys were just messing with the two dum-dums in Wisconsin. So we go out there at lunchtime. There's no alligator. And now I'm convinced that this is all made up. And because all these guys were from Georgia and Florida, you know, that area.
Yeah.
We were the only two that got on an airplane to fly down to go to this training. We had no idea what we were getting involved with. So later that afternoon, we have another break. We go outside, and lo and behold, there's an alligator laying on the bank of this retention pond out there.
Right.
And I don't remember what they had a name for this thing. Some day they were telling us, like, some days they'd come out for break and this thing would be in the parking lot laying on the cement because it gets warm and they like the warm sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Or sometimes it'd be underneath somebody's car in the parking lot. And this was like normal life. Like, this was foreign to us. You know, we got, you know, Bigfoot and some crazy things up here, but we don't have no alligators. So, anyways, this alligator's laying on this pond, on the side of this pond. And my partner, now we have cell phones. Now we're learning all kind of stuff. So he's going to go. He's going to sneak up on this thing, right?
All right.
And he was much older than I was, but I guess in some respect he'd lived most of his life, and if this alligator ate him, I guess he was okay with that. But anyway, so he's going to sneak up on this thing because he wants to get some close-up pictures, and at that time we didn't have the fancy Zoom cameras and all that. So he starts walking around this pond. Well, my mind goes to, I'm going to record this because when this alligator eats him, this is going to be like some cool stuff to have on video, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I start recording him sneaking around the pond to get close to the alligator to record it and take a picture.
Right.
And this thing lays there and he gets, I don't know, 20, 30 feet away. And the alligator kind of stands up a little bit on its all fours, just kind of raises up off its belly. And I'm thinking, all right, here we go. This is the money shot right here. And nothing happened. I mean, ultimately, we ended up seeing this thing all week. It didn't eat my partner. We got some cool. I still have the video and the photos from that. But so we ended up learning a lot.
Yeah.
I guess the point of the whole thing is that was kind of my first exposure to formal training. Since then, I've been to many, many trainings. So,
yeah. Some of my beginning trainings was similar stories, but yeah, you got to start somewhere. And back in those days, you and I, you know, kind of started around the same time. You can learn a lot really quick, and then after a while, then it's either catching up or just learning the new technology that's out, because cell phones have advanced tremendously from back in the 90s.
Yeah. You wouldn't even people today, you know, like my kids, they wouldn't even recognize. They wouldn't know what to do with the old flip phone or.
Yeah.
What was it? What was the one that had the little ball on it? It had like the roller ball. It was a Motorola something, wasn't it?
Was it the Motorola Razor?
That's not the one I'm thinking of.
No,
actually, it wasn't Motorola.
BlackBerry.
Yeah, now BlackBerry's coming back again. It's kind of like bell bottom pants. It seems like it comes full circle, and now people are wearing the old bell bottoms again.
Yeah, well, you know, with some of the new technology, especially when it comes to, you know, like the video and things like that, but the applications that you now can install on phone has just opened up the forensics world to all kinds of additional investigations. And with cloud technology and, you know, all the applications wanting to use the cloud technology to store everything, It's you know, just one cell phone can become a beast if you don't know what you're doing and don't know what you're looking for. So,
yeah. Well, even you know, then,
lots of training. You've had lots of training since then as well to catch up with that new technology.
Yeah. Well, but even then, you know, just taking digital photos of text messages and then the time and date stamps and stuff, so you could show some justification for these photos and that they were, you know, occurred at the time or date or whatever that,
right.
You know, yeah. Your, whatever it was you were investigating. But, you know, then that created the next monster. You know, now you had 5 or 6 cell phones in one case and you had 500 photos from each cell phone. You know, where do we store this stuff? You know, we started off, we had the 3.5-inch floppy disks and then we went to, you know, you got a, was it 250 megabyte thumb drive? You know, we thought that was just the best thing ever. And then all of a sudden you had a gigabyte. A gigabyte was unheard of, you know? And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. And these photos were huge.
That's happened for years, you know, and doing digital forensics, you know, on cell phones or any technology. But, you know, when you do it long enough, you come full circle where it's like, you know, like maybe there's a brand new piece of technology, maybe a new, brand new iPhone or a brand new Android out or something like that. It's like, okay, but this has a feature now that none of the forensic software will actually be able to do it. And then 6 months later, all of the forensics tools kind of catch up and it's like, man, I wish I would have had that on that case I worked 6 months ago so I could actually, you know, get that evidence and pull it out of there. And, you know, it happens. It's the leapfrog of technology and forensics tools to be able to get that. And of course, it's not a dead case just because we can't get it the traditional way of, you know, using a forensics tools. But some of the newer forensics investigators on cell phones don't have the kind of training that you and I got very early on, like you're talking about where, you have, a video camera and you're videotaping you going through the screens. And whenever you got that new technology, sometimes that's the best that you can do. And
you know,
as long as the attorneys can handle the best evidence arguments and make that work. I mean, it actually works. So,
yeah, I mean, there's still times today where that's the only avenue of preserving something.
Right.
And you know, you gotta do what you gotta do sometimes. And you don't always have every tool and everything you want, you know, at your disposal. So.
Well, and you and I have the background and experience whenever we run up against a situation like that. So I've experienced going, you know, and seeing other investigators that are younger, less experienced, that, you know, don't have that background of, you know, what you and I have, that law enforcement, knowing how to handle evidence and how to obtain that and still protect the integrity of the evidence. You and I have that. And I've seen other investigators, younger investigators, just say, oh, well, I'm just going to write this down and that's good enough. You believe me because I'm not going to lie to you. Well, that's not the way courts work. And like I said, you and I understand that. And I'm starting to see a lot more investigators find themselves in those situations where they really think they're doing it the right way. And they think that that's the only way they could do it. And then somebody hiring somebody like you and me going expert against expert. We just mop the floor with them because they're just not truly trained on how to handle evidence and how to get this information into court and protect the integrity of the evidence.
Well, it kind of makes sense that, you know, it's kind of like the old adage, you know, things were rough back in the early days of things, you know, where you had to walk to school uphill both ways and all that. Yeah. Well, so I had to survive an alligator attack to be able to get myself into cell phone forensics. So the trauma of thinking my partner was going to be missing a limb and I was going to have it on video at the time.
That's what you wanted. You just wanted it on video. I know you. You just wanted it on video. So you can show all the guys in the squad room. That's what you wanted.
We still laugh over this when we get together and he's retired now. But we still, that alligator story has never left us. Well, I mean, there was a few more close calls in this process too. You know, we had the rental car on a 4-lane highway down there, and we were, I remember we were driving against traffic on, in 4 lanes of going the wrong direction for a period of time. So, there was that, but the alligator still was much more cooler. So not many people can say they went through their first training and had to dodge an alligator to get to class.
Not a forensics requirement, but definitely fun. All right. So that's our video for today. Rob, you got anything else to wrap this up with?
Nope. I think we covered most of it. We survived the alligator. Obviously that training prompted more training, and, you know, as we kind of alluded to it, it's a never ending process. Nowadays the technology, I mean, in digital forensics, I mean, in your TV and whatever, just the cell phone technology itself, constantly changing, all the application stuff. So the education process at that time was get some training, so we had some general idea what we were dealing with. Now it's, I mean, daily you're reading articles and learning about this device or that device or some new software or some update. You get an update to your software and now all of a sudden you can do things you couldn't do yesterday. And it's crazy. So,
well, we thank you for joining us on our Digital Forensics Redefined podcast. Please join us next time for a new episode where we help you to find the truth in data with digital forensics.
Thanks for joining our podcast this week, brought to you by Defense Forensic, where we find the truth in data.
Also, check out our website at defenseforensic.com for more information on the services available for individuals and organizations that require expert analysis of digital evidence.
And once again, thanks for watching, and join us next week for a new episode. And remember, the truth is out there.